everyone. Welcome to CBS Mornings on the Go Ahead on this Monday, June 29th. Serena Williams returns. She's back at Wimbledon for the first time in years. John Wertheim from 60 Minutes is there, too, and he has a preview. Plus, we've got a heat wave coming in the eastern half of the country. People on GLP-1 drugs could be especially at risk of dehydration. An expert will tell us why and how to avoid it. We've also got Olivia Wilde and Edward Norton on set. They're the stars of the Wilde's new movie, The Invite. And is Taylor Swift really getting married at Madison Square Garden this weekend? We've got someone who planned one of the most famous secret weddings of all time for John F. Kennedy Jr. and Carolyn Bessette. And she has a lot to say. All that and more ahead.
I love all the conversation about the Taylor Swift wedding and Travis Kelce. And then with Ed Norton and Olivia Wilde, because this is a really wild ride.
It really is. It is laugh out loud funny.
Yes. And then,
it will make you.
Takes a turn.
Can't wait to talk about that movie.
I'm very excited about that, too. We're going to begin, though, with this. The massive wildfires in the West, you've heard all about it, and the dangerous heat wave, well, it's spreading east. In Utah, several wildfires are scorching tens of thousands of acres. And guess what? It's just getting bigger. That includes the Cottonwood Fire, the most destructive in state history. CBS News meteorologist Rob Marciano is tracking it all. He's here. Is there any relief in sight on the fires, Rob? Just say yes.
Yes, but not immediately. So we'll just have to be a little more patient, a couple more days of this, and then we'll get into a cooling pattern out west. It'll heat up in the east, as you'll soon see. But these are the numbers as far as these fires are concerned and the relative humidity levels. That's the problem. So today, maybe less extreme in Utah, at least. But as we go through tomorrow, probably back to critical. And you can see red flag warnings are posted today for those low humidities. And there will be gusty winds 40 to 60 miles an hour. And we do have new fires that are burning in Colorado and those fatalities, unfortunately, in parts of Utah and right on the border. All right. A lot of red on the map today. And tomorrow, and pink is should be good, but it's not. It means excessive heat warnings or extreme heat warnings. Kansas City, Des Moines, Minneapolis, Chicago, Detroit, Milwaukee, and then spreading towards Detroit and New York City. These are watches, meaning the heat will come later in the week. So heat dome in place here, not much in the way of cloud cover. These are temperatures that are measured in the shade without humidity. You coupled the humidity, it feels even warmer than this. And again, temperatures up and over 100 degrees by the time we get closer to the holiday. It's going to be a warm fourth in these parts. Over to you.
Yeah, we're going to be sweating, Rob. Thank you. Now to Kate Middleton, the Princess of Wales, sharing a deeply personal message after she climbed the three highest mountains in England, Scotland, and Wales. She was raising money and awareness for a cancer charity. In her message, the future queen revealed how cancer has changed her life. Holly Williams has more.
I'm so grateful to be here, to be strong enough to walk these hills. But more importantly, it's to give something back.
The Princess of Wales announced she'd completed the Three Peaks Challenge this past weekend. Kate climbed the highest mountains in England, Scotland, and Wales, all within 24 hours, raising money for a cancer charity.
I really wanted to use this opportunity as my way of contributing to all the wonderful work that's going on.
Is this filming?
Hello.
It's been nearly 2 years since Kate released this very personal video with her family, announcing she'd finished her chemotherapy treatment and was focused on staying cancer-free.
This time has above all reminded William and me to reflect and be grateful for the simple yet important things in life.
Since then, she's returned to royal duties, including the King's official birthday celebration this month. After marrying into the royal family 15 years ago, Kate's become one of its most popular members, according to the polls, and crucial to the future of the British monarchy. For CBS Mornings, I'm Holly Williams in London.
So admire her.
Yeah.
And what she does and how she does it.
Yeah, and we're glad that she's healthy.
Yes, absolutely.
In today's Health Watch, a warning for people taking GLP-1 medications as summer heats up. More than 10% of Americans say they use the drugs, but experts say some side effects could lead to dehydration, especially in extreme heat. Nutritionist Carrie Glassman is founder and CEO of Nutritious Life. Good morning, Carrie. Thanks so much for
being
with us.
Good morning. Wonderful to be here.
So, I mean, we can all get dehydrated in the summer. Why is this a particular concern with people who are on GLP-1s?
So GLP-1 drugs do not
not dehydrate you directly. They may dehydrate you indirectly, and there are two main reasons why. So first, remember, GLP-1 medications delay gastric emptying. So that means that food moves through our digestive system slower, making us feel more full and less thirsty. And again, that's what these medications are supposed to do. But that may cause us to, again, eat less and also drink less. And about 20% of the water, the fluid that we intake a day, comes from high water volume foods. So now we're drinking less, we're eating less high water volume foods. The second reason they may dehydrate us is because about 40 to 70% of people on GLP-1 medications have GI side effects like nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea, and that causes fluid loss. So it's not that they're a diuretic, it's that these side effects, and some of them are the side effects that were supposed to happen from GLP-1s, right? Feeling less hungry and less interested in food and drinking.
So what should people be doing to stay hydrated?
Yeah, so first, start early in the morning. When you sleep, you actually lose some fluid through sweat. So hydrate first thing in the morning, and then sip, especially if you're nauseous from drinking and you feel full and you don't want to drink as much. Sip slowly. So I say be intentional and consistent starting first thing in the morning so you don't become dehydrated. Add in electrolytes if you may need. So even a little bit of salt, you may need an electrolyte powder. And then add in high water volume foods. Things like fruit, like cantaloupe, watermelon, yogurt, soups, and broths. Make sure that that's part of your diet plan.
Okay, it's summer, so like real talk, some people like to have an adult beverage. How does that factor into this dehydration?
Great question, and you do have to be even more careful. If you are drinking alcohol, first of all, then you may forget to drink your water and hydrate. So you, and also alcohol can dehydrate you, so you have to be even more careful and absolutely hydrate before you plan on drinking any alcohol.
We should know this, but what are some of the signs that you're dehydrated?
Yeah, well, no, that's a great question. So you might be tired, dry mouth, you might be urinating less, you might feel brain fog, or you may have a headache. And then more severe signs are going to be a racing heart. So that's also something to really be concerned about, or maybe even feeling confused. Or if you're vomiting or you can't keep any water down and you start to vomit or have diarrhea, you really want to make sure that you do something about that immediately.
If you have any of the signs, is there anything you can do to, you can't just like chug water, would that fix it?
Well, you don't want to chug water, you want to get in some electrolytes with that water. But again, if you have some of those severe signs, I would go seek medical attention because you need to be rehydrated and replenish immediately.
All right, Carrie Glassman, thank you.
That means it's time for a look at the stories that caught our eye, you should say. Kicking off the week for us, here is Chanel Call. I started to say in the United States, but it's us. Again, that's weird to say United States. Thinking of, for us, is Chanel Call.
Hi,
right,
good
Chanel,
morning,
good morning
guys.
To you.
Representing the United
yes,
States.
There we go. There we go.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Good to see you. So we begin with some signs that a groundbreaking social media ban might not actually be working as intended. So last year, remember, Australia banned the use of social media for kids under 16. Now the government is announcing it's actually going to be doubling the maximum fine for tech companies that violate this law, increasing it to, get this, around $68 million. So it comes on the heels of a new study from the British Medical Journal. This found 85% of Australian kids aged 12 to 15 were still using social media months after that ban took effect. No word yet on when the harsher penalty will kick in. All right, now to some stunning images out of Paris showing the Eiffel Tower getting struck by lightning. Take a look. So this shocking video was captured during a thunderstorm that hit the City of Light on Saturday. You can actually see onlookers stopped in their tracks watching all of this action unfold. Luckily, no damage to the iconic structure was reported. It's stunning to me to see all those people around. For me, it's a no for me, dog. I'm not standing around. When I see lightning, I'm running.
Yes.
All right, finally for us, some troubling news involving former Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. So Buttigieg revealed that he was separated from his children by Child Protective Services services after a tip officials believe was politically motivated. Buttigieg says a police officer and CPS worker came to his home after an anonymous caller said he posed a risk to his four-year-old twins. Authorities said he could not be alone with them until they could be interviewed the next day. Authorities later on determined the tips they received were false. And, you know, this brings up so many questions
yes.
for me that we still don't have answers to. But, like, what's the process here? And also, this would have been so traumatic for those poor four-year-old right. kids,
of course.
Right? They need to be interviewed and, before they can see their parents again.
And for Pete Buttigieg and his husband, too, for the little right. kids, for all involved. But it does make me wonder, too, anybody can just call and say anything and they can come and take your children?
Especially yeah. in this climate, right?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, scary stuff.
All right, Chanel, thank you so much.
You. Very upsetting.
You might have heard, maybe most of us have, Taylor yes. Swift and Travis Kelce are getting married.
I
and
heard.
It could happen this week. Multiple sources say the couple is planning a multi-day celebration at New York's Madison Square Garden right before July 4th. Adriana Diaz is on the case for us there at the Garden. She's joining us now. Okay, Adriana, realistically, what do we actually know?
Yes.
Okay, guys, so you know the rumor mill is spinning off the rails for this wedding, but the clues are pointing to this behemoth of a venue behind me, Madison Square Garden. Yes, the temple of the New York Knicks, an ultimate concert venue to be sure. But does it scream radiant, folkloric wedding of our dreams? Not so much. Still, with any good reporting, you have got to follow the paper trail, and that is what the Swifties at CBS News have done, and here's what they found.
Meet you where you been. It's been the blank space of 2026.
Are you ready for it?
Where and when is Taylor and Travis's wedding? Our reporting indicates the world's most famous couple could be taking over the world's most famous arena.
We begin our story in New York.
Here are the clues. New York City Hall has confirmed to CBS News that an application has been filed for an event in or around Madison Square Garden on July 3rd, with a capacity of 999 guests. Organizers have also asked for the streets to be closed around MSG around that date. But here's the catch. There are no public events listed on Madison Square Garden's website for these days.
Hey, Travis. Hey, Taylor.
Winnick Productions, a company that produces red carpet events for the Grammys and Tonys, has applied for a permit to set up a tent or canopy outside the garden during that time. They declined to comment further to CBS News. Swifties also noticed this Stevie Nicks shirt during the NBA Finals at the Garden earlier this month. Knicks is rumored to be performing at the wedding. Taylor and Travis wouldn't be the first couple to get married at MSG. Funk legend Sly Stone married Kathy Silva there in 1974 in front of 23,000 guests. But this is different, says People's Melody Chu.
I absolutely think that Taylor and Travis are America's royal couple.
Chu says even in the pantheon of celebrity mega weddings, Taylor and Travis take, well, the cake.
We've got Dua Lipa's wedding that just happened. It was stunning. And then we had Lauren Sanchez and Jeff Bezos' wedding last year. We've had several royal weddings, but we haven't had something like this in a long time. This level of stardom where even the royals are rumored to attend.
That's right. Prince William said on British radio that he's hoping for an invite. He and his kids are big fans. But I want to show you guys something else from here on the ground. Take a look at these police barricades that we see set up around the venue. Remember, MSG says that there are no official events on their calendar. So what are the barricades doing here? Coincidence? We'll see. Nate?
All right, Adriana.
It's just so exciting. It's just so exciting.
She is
I love
seriously investigative journalism
yes,
out
yes,
there.
Yes.
What do you love about it, Gail? It's like the little girl inside
well,
of you.
Number one,
like,
I just love. I love them as a couple.
And you love romance
from the very beginning. I love them together as a couple, and I just think to see them both so happy at the top of their game.
Yeah.
I just think
and
you just want it to be a, and I love
frogs.
The fairy tale.
Yes.
I love the fairy tale.
There's something romantic about the intentionality of it.
Yes.
Like, regardless of what you think about how big it may be, just the fact that they have everything so dialed in, it means they're both intentional about what they
and
want this to
be. And also, I actually believe they're in love.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure, for sure. But Nate, no one has asked me anything from the Taylor camp, but I just saw her being married in a garden with lots of flowers and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty outside nature. So I'm a little thrown by this, but we shall see.
We shall see.
Because right now, don't nobody know nothing about nothing.
Right.
I'll say this, they've got good friends because everybody's keeping it a secret.
Yeah. Or their friends don't know.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about it a little later in the show, too, with someone who has a history in planning secret weddings. It was a star-studded Sunday spectacle for what BET calls culture's biggest night. The 2026 BET Awards returned to Los Angeles' Peacock Theater for its 26th annual celebration. The night had it all, from performances featuring some of the best in music to an all-star tribute to the legendary Lauryn Hill, plus a surprise appearance that became one of the most emotional moments of the night. A dramatic entrance for comedian and BET Award show host Drewski, who flew onto the stage, literally, kicking off a night full of music and culture. One of the show's opening performances featured Kehlani, with Jamie Foxx on piano and his daughter on guitar.
Kehlani!
Visibly surprised, Kehlani picked up the Best Female R&B Pop Artist Award, while Leon Thomas won for the male category. Cardi B rolled in hot, arriving to the stage on a bike, bringing the crowd to their feet. She also won for Best Female Hip-Hop Artist.
Janet Jackson!
In one of the most emotional moments of the night, Teyana Taylor broke out in tears as Janet Jackson surprised her with the BET Icon of the Year Award.
I worked my off 20 years for this. So I'm not accepting what I've earned with arrogance. I'm accepting what I've earned with gratitude.
Taylor cleaned up, winning the Fashion Vanguard Award, Video Director of the Year, and Best Actress Award.
Dolce and SZA!
Dolce and SZA picked up the BET Her Award for their empowering track, Girl Get Up.
I was on a humble, you on every day, show.
It was a 20-minute star-studded tribute celebrating Lauryn Hill's career with the Living Legend Icon Award.
But I fight for y'all. And fighting for y'all is me fighting for myself. It's me fighting for my children. It's me fighting for my parents. It's me fighting for my grandparents. It's me fighting for my community.
Followed by a performance by the singer herself.
That was such a great moment. Mm-hmm. And then especially when her daughter came out mm-hmm. and sang to her, the whole thing was so, it was so touching. I love the Teyana Taylor moment. In the intro to her, it said, legacy is not determined by time. It's determined by boundless creativity.
That's right.
Wasn't that a good way to describe Teyana? She was very overcome. From the front, the dress is good, but from the side, I did get a little worried. But once she got on the stage and the emotion took over, I just fell in love with what she did. Yes. Yeah.
That wardrobe tape was holding on. Yeah.
And she deserves it, too. When you look at her body of work, the way they put out her body of work, what can we say about Drewski? Because I love the piece that you did with him.
Yeah, shout out to Drewski. It's not easy to host. Being the youngest host, he did his thing. Drewski is a superstar. He has a movie coming out. He's going to be, I think, one of the top actors in no time. The BET Awards was amazing. Shout out to Teyana Taylor and Janet coming through.
Yes, yes.
Doing what Janet does, which is commanding the room. It was almost like the room went silent. House went silent.
Being all Janet Jackson-like.
Right, no doubt about it. Coming up, Olivia Wilde and Edward Norton from the new movie, The Invite, are here. This movie is about life, love, marriage, and adventures. You want to stick around for it. Plus, excitement is in the building for Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce's rumored wedding. We will talk with the woman who planned JFK Jr. and Carolyn Bessette's secret wedding. Wimbledon kicks off today in London, and everybody is talking about the return of the queen of the court, Serena Williams. The 7-time Wimbledon singles champ is vying for her 24th Grand Slam singles title. At 44 years old, this will be her first major since 2022. For more on Serena's odds and the other big storylines, let's go to sports journalist and 60 Minutes correspondent John Wertheim in Wimbledon. Good morning, John.
Hey, Nate, how are you?
Good to see you. Appreciate you joining us. Let's talk about her return. So what has been the reaction from everybody? Word on the street is that they're treating her like Elvis.
It's like Jordan, Tom Brady, and Elvis all coming back at one time. Bear in mind, she hasn't played a singles match yet, and you've got all the players on the practice courts lining up for selfies. Everywhere she goes, it's a story. There are 128 round one matches behind me here in the next few days, but there's really only one that people are talking about, and that is the return of the queen. As you say, 44 years old, and Serena still has aura, and it'll be really interesting to see how this all plays out. This is the week one story, no doubt.
I know, John, and I just get the impression everybody's pulling for her. I can't wait to see her on the court. I cannot wait. What's she going to do? What's she going to wear? All of the things. But let's talk about Novak Djokovic, too, because this could be a big deal for him as well. If he wins this match, what does this mean in terms of the numbers for him?
Well, he's just a baby, Gail. He's only 39, so he's got plenty of time by Serena standards. But Novak, I mean, Serena is a wild card. This is the first singles match he's played in almost 4 years. That's not the case with Djokovic. 39 years old, he has 24 majors. He's going for 25th, and he's got a real shot. He isn't playing so much these days, but when he does, he's been pretty good. Carlos Alcaraz, who's been this sort of this elite champion, he is not in the draw. So Jannik Sinner is the player to beat. But after that, I think you could make a case Djokovic is probably number two, potentially. This would just be an extraordinary achievement for him. I mean, I think most people have already deemed him the greatest male of all time, much as Serena is the GOAT for women. But if Novak Djokovic could come here at age 39 and win this entire tournament, I'm not sure what is left to say about him. And I think he's got a real chance here.
John, I know you talked about all the big names, but what about the lesser known names? Who are you watching for as long shots? Real quick.
Let's go with Americans. Jess Pegula, who just got done winning about tennis before we came on air. She is someone to keep an eye out for. She's the fourth seed. More Americans. Ben Shelton, Francis Tiafoe, Taylor Fritz. Oh. It's been 23 years since an American male won a major. I think Americans have a real chance here. Keep an eye on those three guys.
All right, Jonathan Wertheim. Thank you, John. We appreciate you.
All right. An Oscar Wilde quote sets the tone for this new comedic drama. It's called The Invite. The quote says this. One should always be in love. That is the reason one should never marry. The film explores the unraveling and the evolution of two very different marriages over the course of one unforgettable night. Olivia Wilde and Seth Rogen play Angela and Joe. Their relationship is already, how should we say, on very shaky, shaky ground when Angela invites her upstairs neighbors, played by Penelope Cruz and Edward Norton, over for dinner. So that sounds easy enough. The night quickly spirals in unexpected directions, and unexpected is the word. In this clip, you can see Joe has no idea this dinner is even happening.
It took you a while to come to the door.
No, they won't.
And it sounded like you were arguing.
No filter.
No, I just want to be honest. We were at the door before we rang, and we could hear you were fighting.
Oh, we were fighting. We were fighting, yeah.
Bit of a contentious environment in here, so I understand if that's repellent to you. No hard feelings, you know what I mean? Completely understand, you know?
We love a contentious environment.
No, we love a contentious. And contentious, boy, let's just say Edward Norton and Olivia Wilde are in the studio. Olivia Wilde, you take us on a wild ride.
Yes, yes.
You directed this baby yourself.
Yes.
But this is the thing. You were very reluctant to actually be in the movie.
I was.
How is this possible, Ed Norton, that she was reluctant?
We were mystified. Seth and I, it was almost like bait and switch. Like, Seth and I wanted to do the movie with Olivia, both as a director and an actress. And then she started sort of saying, well, isn't so-and-so terrific? And isn't so-and-so terrific? And we said, yes. However, you know, I don't know what was really going on. I think when a thing is right in front of you that you know is going to be one of your great, a great challenge and a great opportunity. I have done that where you can almost say to yourself, am I the right person for this? Can I do this? And I just think it took a minute, but
it was a great role. I was like, this could be a chance to work with a really fantastic actress. And we already had Penelope Cruz, and I was like, we can get someone else amazing. And they were like, you're going to do it.
We were in a text chain, the three of us. And eventually Seth said, what is actually happening here? Let's stop this conversation. We want to do this.
So the cast is so good, but you have to get set the premise because the neighbors are upstairs.
Yes.
They're swingers.
Yes, we don't know that yet.
But you don't know that.
We know they're having
We
know Joe and Angela, Seth and myself, we know that our neighbors, Penelope and Edward, are upstairs and they have very loud sex. And it's been plaguing us.
Animalistic.
Yes. Growling.
Exactly. A lot of growling.
Yes.
And Joe is obsessed with this and he threatens that tonight is the night he's going to bring it up, which Angela is desperate for him not to. And then the whole night he's sort of threatening to bring it up, but they end up being something completely different. Yeah. And
they make the invitation.
Yeah.
They make the
This movie is a sweet blend of all of these emotions that pull at you. It's laugh out loud funny.
Yes.
But then there's times where it'll make you think.
Yeah.
Not just about you, the meaning of life, the meaning of love.
Yes.
And then there's moments where you legitimately want to cry.
Aww.
Like, how important was it to make this a multi-layered storyline?
Oh, I mean, I think the greatest comedies are always also kind of heartbreaking. And you think about directors like Mike Nichols, of course, but like Rob Reiner. You think of When Harry Met Sally. I mean, that is a movie that also has just a lot of pain and heartbreak in it, which is why it's so funny. So I think we wanted to have that whole range of emotions so that people could recognize themselves and their relationships.
It's funny. It's funny to watch people fumbling, people failing and fumbling and fighting and kind of tripping over their own humanity, you know, on the way to authenticity. But then I think sometimes confronting that you're not living in truth, you're not, you've lost your authentic self is painful. And I think I did have a friend who said, she came up and said, I have not laughed that hard in a long time, but I'm going to go home and have a good cry now.
Yeah.
Like,
that is such a good way to put it.
Yeah. Yes. And I do think that sums up. I think Olivia really hit the high and the low in this, and I think it's wonderful because I think that's a lot of people's experience in long-term relationships. Yeah. It's your joy and your cross. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Speaking of the experiences in long-term relationships, what of your own experiences or those of the people around you did you bring into roles?
We all threw everything into the pot. We had this really fun, kind of intensive 2-week rehearsal period, which was really us workshopping this script together with our screenwriters. And we just put so many of our own anecdotes. I mean, there are large sections of the movie which are just based on things that have happened to Edward.
It was kind of like a closed door session. And this one really said, I'm going to ask everybody to be very vulnerable and very honest, and we're going to put a lot up on the whiteboard about what we've all been through and see what we want to infuse this with. And
because I saw Rashida Jones and Will McCormick had the initial script, and then I saw that you all worked on it together.
Yes.
What made it different, Ed, for you with her directing? We know she's a great actress. This was not her first movie directing.
I love both of Olivia's movies before this one, and I think having directed and acted in multiple movies, and Seth has as well, obviously, there are aspects of that sort of schizophrenia that are very challenging. It can be very, very hard to cultivate like presence and availability to what happens as an actor while also keeping your analytic mind on the craft of the film you're trying to make. What really knocked me out about the way Olivia managed that for us was we as an acting foursome had a space with wild freedom for improvisation and discovery. She shot the film in order, which almost never happens, so that each scene was able to build off the last. But at the same time, she and our brilliant DP and crew, they had created a set. They had done so much preparatory work on, if the scene takes us here, here's how we'll address it.
I'll say this.
It's amazing.
It's an amazing, amazing.
Number one, you have to see it on the big screen.
Yes.
You have to see it on the big screen.
Yes.
And you incorporate Esther Perel and her talent. It's so good, guys.
And with a crowd.
Yeah, go see it. It's Monday, which means Beg Knows America. Today, David shows us the inspiring way a group of young people are marking our country's 250th birthday. Happy birthday, America.
Welcome back to CBS Mornings. You know what we're talking about. We have a special talk of the table today, and it's all about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce's rumored wedding this July 4th weekend. We thought, who better to ask about this than the woman who planned John F. Kennedy Jr.'s secret wedding to Carolyn Bessette almost 30 years ago. That is Rose Marie Terenzio, JFK Jr.'s former chief of staff. She's also the author of JFK Jr., An Intimate Oral Biography. Rose Marie, good morning. Thanks
good
for
morning.
Being
with us.
Okay,
thanks
I have to ask,
me.
The first question is, do you really think?
No.
Does she really think what? What?
That it's going to be at MSG.
I don't think it's going to be at MSG. I don't. But I did.
That's a hell of a diversion.
I could see her doing something for her fans at MSG.
Okay.
Because I overheard a girl on the train. She was sitting behind me talking to her mom, and she said...
About how old was she?
She was probably late teens, okay. Maybe early 20s.
Okay.
And she said, you know, Mom, Taylor has to invite us to do something to bring us into her wedding. We've been invested in her love life for so long. And I think she has such an emotional connection to her fans, and she understands that relationship so well. That I think there'll be something for the fans.
I like how you're thinking. I could see her doing something like that.
And maybe she's going to do, like, maybe she's, you know, already married, and she's going to do, like, a slideshow at MSG and a little Travis and Taylor.
You amazed, though, Rosemarie, that a lot of people know the details?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of planning has to go into this. Are you amazed that people still don't really know by people, I mean all of us, really don't know when it's happening, where it's happening, how it's happening. You're amazed that all the people that know, no one has leaked anything about
with it. Social media.
With social
being,
media.
With social media,
heavy influence
yes.
I think that's extraordinary.
I think it's amazing. And I also think that they have, people are so invested in those two. And I think they're really invested in them having their moment. I really do. The way that they... Their effervescence as a couple, they're always cheering each other on. I just think people are invested in giving them a beautiful
and they want to honor that. They want to honor the fact that they're if you know about it, they trust you.
Yeah.
But I do think having something at Madison Square Garden, something is going to happen at Madison Square Garden. I do believe that. We just don't know the extent of it. But what goes into planning something and keeping it so top secret when everybody's trying? They will pay you to get information. They will try to imposter to, you know, break the law to get information.
Right.
What goes into something on this scale to keep it so secret?
I think that it's, number one, it's intimacy. It's people you know very well and you tell only them. And the other thing is decoys. I mean, we left itineraries for Ireland around the office.
So fake itineraries?
Fake itineraries. Oh, I had a travel agent print them up. The other thing is no texts. No emails, nothing
but
in writing.
But nothing in writing?
All by phone. Really? Or in person.
Really?
But isn't it more difficult to pull that off nowadays, to Gail's point?
Yes.
I mean, everybody has their phone in their hands. Everybody wants to communicate. Everybody is listening, got their ears to the street to try to hear something. Especially when you start hearing about city blocks being closed down and permits being asked for.
Yes.
Isn't it more difficult to pull off a secret wedding now?
It's more difficult. It's not impossible.
Not impossible.
I think those two could do it. And especially her. She just has such savvy about everything that she
true.
Does. And I think she could do it.
What would you be doing at this moment if you were in charge to dot every I and cross every T to make sure everything goes according to your plan?
I would be calling and maybe even showing up in person to every single person's place and, you know, giving them a little...
You would?
Keep your mouth shut. Make sure you keep your mouth shut.
That would be, would be the final thing on your
to-do list? I would be reinforcing the privacy aspect.
All right.
That's what I would be doing.
Well, it will all be revealed soon. By the time this week is over, we'll know. We will know. Rosemarie, we thank you.
Thank you so much.
There's a reason that wedding was a secret.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's Monday, so you know that means it's time for Beg Knows America. And this morning, David has something very special ahead of America's 250th birthday this week. David, good morning. So we hear that you've got a personal connection with this story.
Yes, Gail, good morning and hello to all of you at home. You know, one of the greatest experiences of my life has been speech and debate. It really helped prepare me for where I am today. And every year, some of the greatest minds of this generation, talented high school students, come together for the National Speech and Debate Tournament, which this year was held in Richmond, Virginia. And Richmond is the site of St. John's Episcopal Church, where 251 years ago, the Second Virginia Convention gathered to debate on how the colony would respond to British aggression. Founding fathers like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson were in attendance. When a delegate named Patrick Henry delivered a fiery address, which is often credited for helping to push the colonies toward revolution. So to mark America's milestone birthday, we decided to bring this defining speech back to life in the place it was created, with the help of the church's executive director, Stephen Wilson, and six top speech and debate competitors from around the country. Janiah Howard from Louisiana, Armand Sethi from Virginia, Catalina and Javier Cabello Corona from Texas, Noah Martinez from California, and Meredith Leo from Minnesota. They all came together to recite those words from the place Henry stood when he gave his speech. Here are parts of that history-defining moment.
No man thinks more highly than I do of the patriotism,
as well as abilities, of the very worthy gentlemen who have just addressed the House.
But different men often see the same subject in different lights.
And therefore, I will hope it not be thought disrespectful to those gentlemen if, entertaining as I do, opinions of a character very opposite to theirs.
I shall speak forth my sentiments freely and without reserve. This is no time for ceremony.
The question before the House is one of awful moment to this country.
For my own part, I consider it as nothing less than a question of freedom or slavery.
And in proportion to the magnitude of the subject ought to be the freedom of the debate.
Is this the part of wise men engaged in a great and arduous struggle for liberty?
Are we disposed to be among the number of those who, having eyes, see not, and having ears, hear not?
The things which so nearly concern their temporal salvation?
For my part, whatever anguish of spirit it may cause,
I am willing to know the whole truth, to know the worst of it, and to provide for it.
And I ask you, gentlemen, what means this martial array if its purpose not to be to force us into submission?
Can gentlemen assign any other possible motive for it?
Has Great Britain any enemy in this quarter of the world to call for all this accumulation of navies and armies?
No, sir, she has none. They are meant for us. They can be meant for no other.
They are sent over to bind and rivet upon us those chains which the British ministry have been so long forging.
And what have we to oppose them? Shall we try argument?
We've been trying that for the last 10 years. What have we new to offer upon the subject?
Nothing.
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 The battle is not to the strong alone.
It is to the vigilant.
The active.
And the brave. Besides, sir, we have no election. If we were base enough to desire it, it is now too late to retire from the contest.
There is no retreat, but in submission and slavery.
Our chains are forged. The clanking can be heard upon the plains of Boston.
The war is inevitable.
And let it come. I repeat it, sir, let it come. It is in vain, sir, to extenuate the matter.
Gentlemen may cry peace, peace.
But there is no peace.
The war is actually begun.
The next gale that sweeps north will bring to our ears a clash of resounding arms.
Our brethren are already in the field.
Why stand we here idle?
What is it that gentlemen wish?
What would they have?
Is life so dear or peace so sweet?
As to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery, forbid it, Almighty God.
I know not
what course others may take.
But as for me,
give me liberty.
Give me liberty.
Give me liberty.
Give me liberty.
Or give me death.
And that speech accelerated the movement that became the Revolutionary War. Friends, over to you.
Well done, David. Listen, all I remember from that speech, because we learned it in school, was give me liberty or give me death. So it was nice to hear it again after all these years. The words hit differently these days.
Beautifully performed,
yeah.
Too.
Well done, your students at UCHOS. Well done.
Yeah, no doubt about it. David, once again,
indeed.
Well,
happy birthday, America.
Yes,
that's
happy birthday
that's
to us.
And in case you don't know, David's got a new podcast, too.
Does he?
It's called The Person Who Believed in Me. And this week's guest is actor and comedian Margaret Cho. Check it out.
He would write me such incredible encouragement, and I just never thought an adult would take the time to do that in such a very gentle way.
Mr. Jackson was murdered.
Yes. It's so complex.
What would you want to say to him?
Oh, David Begno, that was a very good tease.
Really good tease.
Because now I want to know, what does she want to say to Mr. Jackson? Then to hear that her teacher was murdered takes on a whole different tone.
Yeah.
That'll do it for us. We thank you for joining us today. We've got a great movie recommendation. What's it called, Nate?
The Invite.
Invite. We highly, highly, highly recommend. We'll see you tomorrow right here on CBS Morning.
See you with another couple.
Yes.
If you're into them. I mean.
Now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Chicago. It's my home.
The acclaimed series, The Chi, reaches its final chapter.
This The Chi. Anything's possible.
The Chi, the final season now streaming, only on Paramount+.